Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
Well, he's losing it, my friends. I'm just going to tell you, I think he's gone over the edge. The he I'm talking about is Bill O'Reilly. We'll get to that in just a second. A story first that, however, must preface the O'Reilly story. This from the Associated Press. Starts out an article by Peter Svensson. Last fall, U.S. Representative Tim Murphy's office started getting phone calls from constituents who complained about receiving recorded messages that badmouthed Murphy. The constituents were especially upset that the messages appeared to come from the congressman's own office. At least that's what the caller ID said. Now, you get this? People were getting calls from a politician's office badmouthing the politician. So they're calling up the politician and going, you know, what's the deal? Well, it turns out that it is now possible, in fact, easily possible, to spoof caller ID. It's called spoofing caller ID. So, for example, there are virtual calling cards that you can buy, $10 for 60 minutes a time. And when you dial the 800 number for the calling card, it then says, what do you want to show on the caller ID screen? And so you type in whatever number you want. Could be anything, you know. Could be the White House. It could be the head of the office of the New York Times. It could be my show. It could be any, God forbid. Anyhow, it could be anything. You type it in, and then it says, okay, and do you want a name to appear? And then what number do you want to call? You call that number, and when they look on their caller ID, they don't have your actual number. They have whatever number you typed in. And there's a bunch of different ways to do this. And this is turning into, in some cases, a real problem. For example, recently a SWAT team surrounded a house in New Brunswick, New Jersey, because the 9/11 folks had received a call where this woman was screaming that she was being held hostage in her apartment. Then she hung up the phone, and they did the caller ID check, and it pointed to a particular apartment building. They surrounded it, busted in, and she's like, you know, who are you? Why are you here? And get that gun out of my face. Somebody had spoofed her caller ID, her phone number on the caller ID. So, you know, and there are concerns that this could be used for identity theft. In other words, somebody calls and you look at your caller ID and it's your bank. And so you take the call and they say, hi, this is Ralph from the accounting department at the at Bank of America or Wells Fargo or whatever it may be, you know. And, you know, if they just did it randomly with the largest banks in town, a lot of people would say, well, I think you must have the wrong person. I don't bank with you. But other people would say, oh, yeah, I bank with you. What's up? Oh, we're having a little problem with your account here, and we need your password. We need to reset your password. And so in order to do that, we need your old password. Would you please give us a password on the account or your PIN number? And you think for a minute, you know, I'm not supposed to give my PIN number or my password out to anybody except my bank. And you look at the caller ID on the phone and you say, but it says right here, you know, Bank of America or Wells Fargo or whatever your bank may be. It says right here, this is my bank. And so you say, okay, well, my password is or whatever. Right. So anyhow, this whole thing of spoofing caller IDs is getting a little problematic. And there's actually people talking about legislation to deal with it, which brings us back to Bill O'Reilly. I got to share, you know, there is this battle going on between Keith Olbermann, God bless him, on MSNBC, the Countdown program, which has turned into one of the better news, probably one of the best news programs that's not on public broadcasting. Amy Goodman, of course, over and above everybody. But Keith Olbermann doing an absolutely marvelous job with his Countdown program. And he keeps making Bill O'Reilly his worst person in the world. Right, he's got this little shtick, this segment that he does every day. And Bill O'Reilly is furious about it. So, thus, on his radio program last week, here we go.
Orlando, Florida. Mike, go.
Hey, Bill. I appreciate you taking my call.
Sure.
I like to listen to you during the day. I think Keith Olbermann showed.
There you go. Mike is he's a gone guy. You know, we have your phone numbers, by the way. So if you're listening, Mike, we have your phone number. And we're going to turn it over to Fox Security, and you'll be getting a little visit.
Maybe Mike is from the mothership.
No, maybe Mike's going to get in big trouble, because we're not going to play around. When you call us, ladies and gentlemen, just so you know, we do have your phone number. And if you say anything untoward, obscene, or anything like that, Fox Security, then we'll contact your local authorities, and you will be held accountable. Fair?
That's fair.
So just all you guys who do this kind of a thing, you know, I know some shock jocks, whatever, you will be held accountable. Believe it. We'll be right back.
Yeah, it's fair. It's unbalanced, but it's fair. So, you know, far be it for me to ever recommend that anybody go to spoofcard.com and get a virtual calling card just to call poor Bill, because this guy's behavior's, well, enough. It's inappropriate to play radio psychologist, even though I have more qualifications than Dr. Laura. The Wall Street Journal today used the I word. This is incredible. The Wall Street Journal, page A4, right up at the top. Impeachment proves risky election issue. Now, the fact of the matter is that they use the I word in the context that Democratic strategists and advisors are using the I word, and that is, don't use the I word. This has become conventional wisdom and in the Democratic Party. And I think it's a shame. Because in my opinion, just speaking for myself, and I know that there's a lot of folks out there from independents like Bernie Sanders to certainly the Democratic strategists, you know, Bob Schrum and whatnot, who disagree with me. But in my opinion, George W. Bush should be held to account for, at the very least, the possibility that he actually lied to the American people and the world in order to have a war in Iraq because he thought it would help his political stand, his and his party's political standings in the 2002 and 2004 elections. And that as a result of that, hundreds, at least as many as 100,000 people, perhaps more, are dead. And as they point out in this poll in the Wall Street Journal, this is the first time I've seen this poll in the mainstream media. We reported on this certainly months ago when this first came out. Bob Fertig with Democrats.com paid for this thing, and it's a Zogby poll. Now, this is a good, solid poll. If the president didn't tell the truth about the reasons for the Iraq war, should Congress consider impeachment? Right now, 51% of Americans say yes, whereas in 1998, at the height of Bill Clinton's impeachment hearings, if the president lied about having a sexual relationship with Monica Lewinsky, should he be impeached? Only 27% said yes. So you've got almost twice as many Americans right now saying George Bush should be impeached as who said Bill Clinton should be impeached. But what happened was when they tried to impeach Bill Clinton over consensual sex between two consenting adults, extramarital, but, you know, lying about consensual sex, most Americans, three-quarters of Americans more or less, said, come on, that's not an impeachable offense. I mean, maybe his wife should impeach him. Maybe she should divorce him. Maybe she should kick him, you know, whatever, you know, upside the head. But this is not about the business of the state. I would suggest to you that it is a very different issue, lying about war. But nonetheless, here the Wall Street Journal, playing this, you know, John Conyers, Congressman John Conyers, on this program, in fact, he told us all about his House resolution to initiate an initial impeachment inquiry. Only 26 of 201 House Democrats have signed on for this thing. And as the Wall Street Journal notes, Democratic strategists remember the fallout Republicans suffered among swing voters in the 1998 election amid their bid to oust Mr. Clinton. The National Republican Congressional Committee sank $10 million into a last-minute advertising blitz focused on Mr. Clinton's character, only to lose 5 seats and see House Speaker Newt Gingrich pressured to resign. Well, of course, they just tried to impeach a guy for having sex. I mean, how many? It's like you look at the statistics. More than half of all Americans have had extramarital sex, married Americans. I mean, it's just, and I'm not endorsing it or applauding it or anything. You know, a lot of us were horrified by it, but the reality is that is different than lying about a war that causes people to die. But you've got a whole bunch of Democrats out there who are scared to death, and articles like this in the Wall Street Journal reinforcing that fear. Although they quote Tony Tripiano, who's an old and dear friend of mine, a great guy, running for the House of Representatives in Michigan. And if you are in Michigan and you can help out Tony, do so. In any case, saying that he's one of 14 candidates who have pledged that if he gets in the House, he's going to try to impeach George W. Bush. But the Democrats are going, oh, when the Republicans impeached Clinton, it hurt them in the next election. I'm telling you, if the Democrats impeach Bush, it won't hurt them in the next election. Because unlike, you know, lying about sex, lying about a war is something Americans actually take seriously. Americans of all political stripes. You've got William F. Buckley out there talking about this. You've got George Will talking. You've got conservatives who, not talking about impeachment, but leaving Bush behind, basically saying enough already. We didn't want to be lied into this war. We don't think it's going all that well. In fact, I'm going to share with you some of Jack Murtha's comments on this as the program goes on. And so I really think that they should. I think that they should go ahead and do it. 16 minutes past the hour. I'm Tom Hartman.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
Well, I won't back down. No, I won't back down. You can stand me up at the gates of hell, but I won't back down.
And welcome back, my friends. 21 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Your light at the end of the tunnel of talk radio. Our telephone number, 866-440-8466, 866-440-THOM. Drop into our live chat room by going to tomhartman.com. However you spell it, will get you there, and just click the live chat button. It'll get you in. Doug Thompson over at Capitol Hill Blue on a rant. He says, using many of the questionable surveillance and monitoring techniques that brought both questions and criticism to his administration, President George W. Bush has launched a war against reporters who write stories unfavorable to his actions and is planning to prosecute journalists to make examples of them in his so-called war on terrorism. Bush recently directed Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez to use, quote, whatever means at your disposal, end quote, to wiretap, follow, harass, and investigate journalists who have published stories about the administration's illegal use of warrantless wiretaps, use of faulty intelligence, and anything else he deems, quote, detrimental to the war on terror, end quote. Thompson goes on to note reporters for the New York Times, which along with Capitol Hill Blue revealed use of the National Security Agency to monitor phone calls and emails of Americans, say FBI agents have interviewed them, and criminal prosecutors at the Justice Department admit they are laying, quote, the groundwork for a grand jury that could lead to criminal charges. This is no small thing. Spokesman for the Justice Department and Department of Homeland Security admit that there are ongoing investigations regarding publication of stories involving threats to national security, but will not reveal what those investigations include. They're even going back to a pre-World War I law that was originally actually aimed at people within the military, saying that they could investigate and prosecute people who leaked critical information. I mean, this is how bad it's getting now. Bush is having to reach that far. I mean, they're going back to a pre-World War I law. Doug Thompson, the publisher of Capitol Hill Blue. Oh, and he adds that this is where it gets very strange. He adds the law, what they're saying is when in recent weeks, I'll just read it to you. In recent weeks, the FBI has issued hundreds of national security letters directing employers, banks, credit card companies, libraries, and other entities to turn over records on reporters. Under the USA Patriot Act, those who must turn over the records are also prohibited from revealing they have done so to the subject of the federal probes. In essence, says prominent New York litigator Glenn Greenwald, in essence, while the president sits in the White House undisturbed after proudly announcing that he has been breaking the law and will continue to do so, his slavish political appointees at the Justice Department are using the mammoth law enforcement powers of the federal government to find and criminally prosecute those who brought this illegal conduct to light. Doug points out that he owns Capitol Hill Blue, and he's the reporter. And he says it hit home last week when one of the FBI's national security letters arrived at the company that hosts the servers for this website, Capitol Hill Blue. That's interesting. Wonder when we're going to get one. The letter demanded traffic data, payment records, and other information about the website, along with information on me, the publisher. Now, that's a problem. I own the company. So, in effect, the feds want me to turn over information on myself and not tell myself that I'm doing it. He says, I turned the letter over to my lawyer and told him to send the following message to the feds. And then there is an expletive, which you cannot say on the radio. It's the one that Cheney said to Pat Leahy on the floor of the Senate, in essence, followed by strong letter to follow. Amazing. Amazing. The Bush administration declaring war on journalists. On journalists. Meanwhile, this weekend, on Meet the Press, Jack Murtha asked what he thought about, you know, Peter Pace's comments, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. Well, here's the question and answer.
Well, Peter Pace, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, said this morning on Meet the Press, he said he believes the war in Iraq is going, in his words, very, very well. What is your assessment?
And Murtha says, you know, why should I believe him?
Why would I believe him? I mean, this administration, including the president, have mischaracterized this war for the last 2 years. They said it'll take 40,000 troops to settle this thing right after the invasion. Then they said there's no insurgency. They're dead enders, is what the Secretary of Defense said. On and on and on with mischaracterization of the war. They said there's nuclear weapons. There were no nuclear weapons there. There are no biological weapons there. No Al-Qaeda connection. So why would I believe the chairman of the Joint Chiefs when he says things are going well?
This is just absolutely incredible. Here you have a former Marine who served in Vietnam on the House Defense Appropriations Committee. I mean, you know, just one of the senior guys representing the Pentagon, saying that a fellow Marine, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, the guy who's got Dwight Eisenhower's old job, is not telling the truth. Why would I believe him, he says. And, do you think the war in Iraq is going very, very well? I don't think so. 27 minutes past the hour.
Bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
Radio operator, do you ever think of me? I'm a gleam on some horizon, just too far away to see.
And welcome back, my friends. 34 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Let me just bring this all back together. Here we have the Democrats afraid to impeach George W. Bush because when the Republicans tried to impeach Bill Clinton over lying about sex, it hurt them in the next election. Or it seemed to hurt them in the next election. You know, they bounced down. Now, you could argue that, you know, normally that would happen anyway, but in any case. And so the Democrats are afraid to impeach or even talk about impeaching Bush for lying us into a war that has cost the lives of thousands. Well, a lot of Americans are not afraid to talk about it. Garrison Keillor just came out and posted an article in Salon magazine and also CommonDreams.org and other places calling for Bush's impeachment. As the Wall Street Journal article points out, three California cities, San Francisco, Santa Cruz, and Arcata, have passed resolutions backing impeachment. Municipalities in North Carolina and Vermont considering such steps. John Conyers pushing this. Tony Trupiano and others, a total of 14 people running for the House of Representatives right now as Democrats, saying that if they are elected, their first order of business will be to investigate whether George W. Bush committed impeachable high crimes and misdemeanors. And what might those impeachable high crimes and misdemeanors be? Well, at their core is the fact that the war in Iraq it's not even a war. That the occupation of Iraq, our war was successful, you recall. We overthrew the government of Iraq. And then we screwed it up. that our occupation of Iraq has caught us flat-footed. As Jack Murtha, who, by the way, is not a proponent of impeachment, pointed out this weekend on Meet the Press. He was pretty blunt about it, actually.
And we've made no progress at all. 60% unemployment. The Iraqis want us out of there. 80% of the Iraqis want us out of there. Oil production below pre-war level. Water production, only 30% of the people are getting water. Now, our troops are being fed well and being taken care of. They're doing everything they can do militarily. But they're in a situation where they're caught in a civil war. And there's two participants fighting for survival and fighting for supremacy inside that country. And that's my definition of a civil war. So I don't believe that the secretary. I think we're not making progress. We're caught in a civil war. We've lost almost 20,000 people in this war, if you count the casualties and the people who have been killed in the 3 years we've been involved.
He's talking about Americans who've lost arms, legs, eyes, and lives. Over 20,000 casualties. Now, the focus of the impeachment efforts against Bill Clinton tended to spin around this idea that he had somehow brought discredit upon the United States of America. Now, at the same time, ironically enough, at the same time, the then sitting Prime Minister, was it Prime Minister or President of France, attended the funeral of one of his peers with his wife on one side and his mistress on the other, for the whole world to see. This happened, like, in the midst of the Clinton impeachment. The rest of the world tends not to think of personal sexual indiscretions or behavior as something that should be, you know, considered a state issue. But the Republican shtick, the Republican point on this, the Republican argument, wrong, not, it's not a shtick, the argument that the Republicans were putting forward on this thing was that Bill Clinton had brought disrepute to the United States. Now, consider this, an op-ed piece in Truthout by Elizabeth Harbury. On Thursday, March 2nd, at 11:30 in the morning, torture survivors and members of the faith and human rights communities silently walked the halls of Congress wearing orange overalls and a gag reading "torture" in dark red letters. These ghost walkers were delivering a message for those who cannot speak for themselves. The U.S. government is practicing torture in Guantanamo and abroad. They talk about how these ghost walkers silently walked through the halls of Congress and some, you know, arms extended, mouths heavily gagged. Some people looked away. Some people stared at them in horror. Some took pictures. How many members of Congress? And she goes on, Elizabeth Harbury, she goes on to say, torture has certainly been carried out in Guantanamo and abroad. The short shackling technique reported and repudiated by the FBI was declared to constitute torture long ago by the United Nations. Waterboarding and horrifying dog attacks have been ordered and used. Psychological tortures have been extreme and shocking. The recent United Nations report denouncing torture in Guantanamo by the United States has been brushed off by the Bush administration as if it were nothing. This is forbidden by our own treaties. It's forbidden by the Geneva Convention. It's forbidden by the Federal War Crimes Act, 18 U.S.C. 2340. It's a felony. You want a high crime or misdemeanor that the Bush administration has promulgated that might be worthy of impeachment of a sitting president and vice president and other members of their administration? I'd say the Secretary of Defense as well. Add to that, in today's paper, The Guardian of the UK, Guantanamo detainee told Geneva rights irrelevant. A senior U.S. military official at Guantanamo Bay told a detainee he did not care about international law and that the Geneva Conventions did not apply to proceedings at the military prison, according to thousands of Pentagon documents released over the weekend by the U.S. government after court action by the Associated Press news agency. The outburst by the Air Force colonel came during a hearing to determine the status of Feroz Abbasi, a Briton held for more than 2 years without charge or trial. Mr. Abbasi, originally from Croydon, South London, said he should be accorded prisoner of war status and demanded his rights under international law and the Geneva Conventions. The tribunal president, not named in the document, says, and I quote, "Once again, international law does not matter here. Geneva Conventions do not matter here. Mr. Abbasi, your conduct is unacceptable. I do not care about international law. I don't want to hear the words international law again. We are not concerned with international law. I'm going to give you one last opportunity." Mr. Abbasi was later removed, and his case was considered behind closed doors. And they just go through person after person after person in this article in The Guardian about these people who were captured from all the evidence that the U.S. government has been forced to release here now, in most cases mistakenly, inappropriately, tortured. And now you tell me, does doing the first preemptive war in the history of this country, I mean, a serious war, you could say, well, what about Reagan and Grenada, or what about Bush Senior and Panama? You know, those are things that they did to get reelected. Those were little countries, and they argued that there was a threat, and they were in our hemisphere. And I mean, this is a big deal. I mean, it was big deals back then. Those were crimes, in my opinion, and should have been prosecuted. But that's in the past now. Here we have, however, Bush doing essentially what was done by Hitler. I mean, Hitler was saying Poland was a threat. They have weapons of mass destruction. They're massing on our borders. They're firing at our people. We've got to do something about it. And it was no threat. It was no threat. But it was a rationale for a preemptive invasion. That was the last time this has been used in a big way. It was Poland in what, 1938, 39? And that, in my opinion, is an impeachable offense. I just really... really think so, rather than simply lying under oath about having sex with somebody. Sure, yeah, you know, lying under oath is wrong. He lost his law license over it. Fine. But I'm sorry, there's a certain expectation, I think, that politicians are going to lie about sex anyway. that human beings are. Who died? Right, Clinton died and nobody. Clinton lied and nobody died. That's the bumper sticker. Connie in Columbus, Ohio. Hey, Connie, welcome to the program.
Hello.
Hi.
You answered a question for me regarding Democrats being afraid of the word impeach. Mm-hmm. I was watching a show this weekend, and Pat Robertson was debating Tom Daschle, and they were allowed to ask each other questions.
Mm-hmm.
Pat Robertson asked Daschle, do you want to impeach the president? And Daschle kept dodging the question.
Right.
It made him look very weak.
Yeah.
And it's just, I really believe that they will use this against us.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And and if the Democrats got a spine, and if they stood up like Tony Tripiano and others are doing and said, you know, we will impeach this guy, not for revenge, not for political purposes like the Republicans did against Bill Clinton in 1998. I mean, that was transparently a political thing.
Yes.
But rather because he actually has committed crimes worthy of impeachment.
Yes.
I mean, you could argue that Bill Clinton, in lying under oath about having sex with Monica Lewinsky, committed a crime worthy of losing his law license. And they did. They pulled his law license for a couple of years. That he discredited himself, that his wife should have been angry with him. Arguably, even the electorate should have had second thoughts about his moral positions and whatnot. But to remove a sitting president from office, I'm sorry, lying to the American people about matters of life and death, that, in my opinion, is a high crime and misdemeanor. Connie, thanks for the call.
Thanks.
I mean, this is... The Dems have got to get it. Somebody's got to wake them up. 45 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. If you're making me wait, if you're leading me out, I need to know.
And welcome Welcome back. Defending America from the conservative weapons of mass deception. Tom Hartman here with you. 50 minutes after the hour. 10 minutes. Coming up to 9 minutes before the top of the hour. Jack Murtha on Meet the Press. Who wants us in Iraq? Well, he had some very specific ideas on this, and they seem fairly well-informed.
The only solution to this is redeploy. Let me tell you, the only people who want us in Iraq is Iran and Al-Qaeda. And I talked to a top-level commander the other day. It was about 2 weeks ago, and he said China wants us there also. Why? Because we're depleting our resources, our physical, troop resources, and our fiscal resources.
It's wiping us out. Al-Qaeda wants us there in Iraq. So here you have George W. Bush, who through his own incompetence and the incompetence of his administration allowed 9/11 to happen despite over 50 specific written warnings that went right into Bush's hands in the daily intelligence estimates. The biggest intelligence failure, and it wasn't actually an intelligence failure, the biggest failure to secure our nation in the history of this country. And then he gets into a war that's exactly what the enemy wants. Is that an impeachable offense? I think so. And that's why I think, the guy who does Prairie Home Companion on National Public Radio, Garrison Keillor, And Tony Tripiano, who's one of 14 candidates around the United States running for the House of Representatives as Democrats on an impeachment platform, are saying. Tony in the state of Michigan. Jen in Sherman Oaks, California? Or is that Jerry? Sometimes I can't tell him. It's Jerry. Hey, Jerry, you're live and on the air.
Hi, Tom. My name is Jerry, and I'm calling from Sherman Oaks.
Hi, Jerry.
Jack Murtha was on Face the Nation. That's the show he was on. He wasn't on Meet the Press.
Oh, okay. Lady, I got it backwards. Sorry. Thank you.
Okay. A lady had called in, and she said that she had seen Pat Robertson debate Daschle.
Yeah, it was actually Pat Buchanan.
And it was Pat Buchanan that was debating Daschle. Pat Buchanan, I don't agree with a lot of the times, but lately I do. He even asked Tom Daschle, would you vote the same knowing what you know now about Iraq? Tom Daschle danced around that question, and finally he said he would have voted the same. I mean, what's the matter with the Democrats? Why don't they speak up? Why don't they have the guts to speak up? I couldn't believe that Tom Daschle would say that.
Because they're listening to their political advisors instead of to their moral compass.
I know it is, and it's really, I'm so disgusted. I've always voted Democrat, but I'm so disgusted with this party, I can't even begin to tell you.
Yeah, well, Jerry, that's the bad news. The good news is that there are some Democrats who are standing up and who are speaking out. People like Russ Feingold and Barbara Boxer.
I love Russ Feingold.
Yeah.
But why doesn't anybody stand up behind him? Jack Murtha, where are they standing up behind Jack Murtha? They don't. They're like they're spineless.
Yeah. Well, not all of them, but yes. And that's why we need to hold them to account. Jerry, thank you very much for the call. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Tom.
You're welcome. Mark in Houston, Texas. Hey, Mark, what's on your mind today?
Well, I don't think that the Democrats can do anything about impeachment right now because
no, of course they can't.
They don't control the House, and
that's right.
The Republicans would probably love to go ahead and process that between now and November, and away with it, and elevate Bush as their bulletproof boy. And
I don't think so. I think the Republicans are running away from him, Mark.
Well, I really think that they would like the opportunity to do away with this, and the reason is that I believe that they're going to just get just annihilated in the midterms.
Yeah.
I think the Democrats are going to regain control of the House and the Senate, and then this issue of impeachment will come up.
Yes, I agree with you, and that's my point, is that, obviously there is, it's not possible that Bush could be impeached right now, because it's not, the Republicans are not even going to allow it out of committee. But, yes, and I think that your take is right. And here's Jack Murtha on that exact same topic.
I think right now I'd predict there's going to be a big turnover in Congress because people are so dissatisfied with a lot of things, the way they've handled and mishandled the war, Katrina, and, of course, natural gas prices, the Medicare problem. All those things are weighing, just like it did in 94.
There you go. That from CBS's Face the Nation with Bob Schieffer. So impeachment proves risky political issue. We'll see. I think not, frankly. Gary in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Hey, Gary, what's up?
You cut me off.
Say what?
Hello?
Gary, you're live and on the air.
Oh, I'm sorry. Good morning.
Hey.
Here's a Democrat that will, along with you and others, will lead the charge. I do think we should try because it keeps the pressure on Bush. There's another aspect of this. Is that what you're saying?
With regard to impeachment?
Yes, it's the aspect.
Yeah, it raises the fact that this guy has lied to us, and he's lied to us in a way that has caused people to die. I really think that not talking. I think the Democratic strategy of not talking to.
I called.
Yeah, I'm sorry, Gary. Your phone is going nuts here. I think the Democratic strategy of not talking about impeachment and not talking about this administration in the context of crimes is a mistake, because I think that they have committed the Bushies are not only have committed crimes, are continuing to commit crimes. They're wiretapping Americans. I mean, for what, a few days? The Democrats said, yeah, Howard Dean is still out there talking about it as crime, but everybody else, they're all running for cover. I don't know what to do. I do know what to do. I tell my elected members of Congress, and I have told my elected member of Congress that, you know, you need to, in my opinion, if you're representing me and you want my opinion, hold these guys accountable. Hold them accountable. Take them to task. Stand up for what you believe in. And get elected to office political candidates who will do the same. And that's what we need to be working on. And if that means, you know, going via the DFO, democracyforamerica.com route or democrats.com route to get money into the progressives in the party rather than going through the party apparatus, fine. Whatever it takes. I'm telling you, progressives and liberals need to be taking back the Democratic Party from the wimps who are allowing right now the Bush administration to be investigating reporters. I mean, this is incredible. It's over the top. It's time for us to take our country back, my friends. 57 minutes past the hour.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information. Uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. 6 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live coast to coast, the place where being progressive never felt so good. The left hand of God. Right here in the studio with me, Michael Lerner. Hey, Michael, welcome to the program.
Great to be with you, Tom.
Rabbi Michael Lerner, the author of the best-selling book, The Left Hand of God, Taking Back Our
Country from the Religious Right.
From the religious...
Right.
You say the religious right, I say the religious Reich. Is there, in your... Well, let me just tell you, in my opinion, there is a war coming out of the religious right on spirituality being waged by religiosity. I don't know how to pronounce the word.
Uh-huh.
But I make a distinction between religious and spiritual. Religious being institutional and spiritual being personal. And it really seems to me that there is an aggressive campaign on the part of the right to suppress the spiritual. Just like the, you know, you go back and look at the history of the Catholic Church, you know, during the Spanish Inquisition when Jews were being forcibly converted to Catholicism, and St. John of the Cross was Jewish and he converted at the age of 13 or 14 in order to stay alive. I mean, it was that or die. And he was helping Teresa of Avila reform the Carmelite order.
Yeah.
And you read Interior Castle by Teresa or Dark Night of the Soul by St. John of the Cross and you get it. That there was a war against spirituality by the church at that time, by this religious institution. And it just seems to me like that's what's going on again.
Well, I certainly agree with you that there is an assault on spirituality. But unfortunately, that assault comes from both the right and the left. Mm-hmm. Because I interviewed in this book, The Left Hand of God, Taking Back Our Country from the Religious Right, I interviewed not the hardcore right people, but 10,000 middle-income working-class people who were moving from being Democratic Party voters, moving to the right. And I asked them why. And very often what they said was that there's a spiritual crisis in their lives, and the left doesn't speak to it at all. The right speaks to it, but in a very distorted fashion. So you're right that very often the content of parts, segments of the religious right, because I don't want to say that they're all the same. They're not. But there are segments of the religious right that are really against the spiritual experience. But nevertheless, they speak a language that speaks to a very large section of American people who are feeling that they are surrounded by materialism and selfishness, and the left only speaks about economic entitlements and political rights. So that's why I've developed in this book, The Left Hand of God, an approach to how to build a spiritual left, and together with Cornel West, the African-American professor of religious studies at Princeton, and Benedictine sister Joan Chittister, we are building a new national organization called the Network of Spiritual Progressives, not just for people who believe in God, but for people who also have a spiritual life and recognize that the Democrats, the left, are never going to be successful unless they can not only talk about material needs, but also speak about spiritual needs.
This is the fundamental thing that I think so many people on the left, frankly, and on the right as well, and particularly in the media, are missing, and that is that there is a basic human need for the experience of I'm almost reluctant to say the divine, because that
let's say the transcendent.
Thank you. Perfect. And different people get that need met in different ways. Some people get that need met by going to the Grand Canyon and standing on the rim and just looking out and just, you know, some people. I knew an astronomer once who told me about how if a week went by and he didn't look in this giant telescope up, you know, deep into the universe, he felt empty.
Yes. We see, one of the things that we learned in this study was that people in the world of work are deeply frustrated because they have very little opportunity to connect their work to any higher meaning and purpose. And people want a purpose-driven life. They want some connection to a higher meaning for their lives besides just the bottom line of maximizing money and power for those for whom they work.
Right.
But what happens is that they're surrounded by people who seem to be just looking out for number one, and they're desperate to be seen for who they really are and not for just how they can be of use to maximizing money and power. So a progressive spirituality could be a powerful critique of the ethos of capitalism, you see, because the ethos of capitalism is actually what's undermining spirituality. If the left were to get
it's what Jesus railed against.
Exactly. If the progressive movements, if the liberals and progressives were to begin to actually talk about what the real source of the spiritual crisis is, we would quickly be getting a challenge to the globalization of selfishness that they call the globalization of capital.
Right.
And that's what we do in this book, The Left Hand of God. I articulate a vision here of a new bottom line for American society so that institutions and social practices aren't judged efficient and productive and rational just to the extent that they maximize money and power, but also to the extent that they maximize love and caring, kindness and generosity, ethical ecological sensitivity, enhance our capacity to respond to other people as embodiments of the sacred, and enhance our capacity to respond to the universe with awe and wonder and radical amazement at the grandeur of creation. Now, that's a spirituality. You don't have to believe in a higher being. You don't have to believe in God, although we're welcoming to people who believe in God, but also to many who don't believe in God, but recognize that this spiritual dimension of life is critical, and that ought to be a part of our new bottom line for judging institutions efficient or productive, including corporations, including government practices. Wherever you're making a decision, look towards how much love and generosity you produce, and we will build a progressive movement that can transcend the old left-right boundaries. That's what we're trying to do in this The Left Hand of God, or you can find our organization, www.spiritualprogressives.org, spiritualprogressives.org, on the web.
And yet when the right rolled out their campaign, I mean, they just crank this thing so hard. They use holidays, for example, Christmas, the recent, you know, the war on Christmas. I mean, Fox,
yes,
you know, had literally logos designed that were...
Well, I was on the O'Reilly show.
Well, let me finish this question.
Go ahead.
When they roll this stuff out and we respond by saying, you know, we don't know, you guys have this war on Christmas, we don't have any, then we respond by saying, but there does seem to be a war on our children.
Yes.
You know, being waged by your friends in the corporate empires.
Yes.
then all of a sudden they change the subject, and there's just no discussion of that. I didn't, you know, I really looked, and every time somebody would try to bring that up, even on non-right-wing talk shows, I mean, you know, mm-hmm. Katie Couric kind of shows,
yes.
The discussion gets changed. Nobody wants to offend corporate America.
Exactly, and I'd say, I was on the O'Reilly show where he was pulling this thing about stealing Christmas, and I said, yeah, there is a spiritual crisis around Christmas and Hanukkah, but that crisis is generated by the pressure to buy, and that's from your corporate world, not from us in the liberal and progressive world, but your corporate world insists that people value themselves by how much they can afford to spend or how much they get in the way of material goods. So it's actually the ethos of corporate capitalism with its vision of the world as based on materialism and how much money you have that is the source of the spiritual crisis. But unless progressives start talking about where that spiritual crisis is coming from, we give the whole area of spirituality over to the right, and then they win.
So if a Democratic politician were to begin to incorporate this, I have seen a number of Democrats clumsily and usually gratuitously try to incorporate, I go to church, or I'm spiritual, or I show up at synagogue, or, you know, blah, blah, blah.
Yes.
And it's tragic, frankly, to watch
yes.
these guys trying to be, light versions of
and you can,
you know,
count
George
on 2006 and 2008 election, every Democrat quoting Bible, but the spiritual right. crisis in American society.
So how should they do it?
Well, in the book, The Left Hand of God, I lay out a spiritual covenant with America. And number one point is that we want a social responsibility amendment to the Constitution that says the corporations that make more than $50 million a year have to get a new corporate charter once every 10 years. And that can only be granted to corporations that can prove a satisfactory history of social responsibility to a jury of ordinary citizens. And so don't create a new regulatory body. Because the regulators often end up in bed with those whom they're supposedly.
What about a jubilee?
Jubilee is another one of the ideas. Reinstitute every 50 years. See, these people
all quote, debt is wiped out. All wealth is equalized.
Exactly. These people quote the Bible when they want to get into homophobic stuff about gays and lesbians. But how come they forget about the Bible when the Bible says that every 7 years all debts are eliminated and every 50 years all the land is redistributed back to the original equal distribution between everyone?
Right.
So there are deep spiritual values, even in the Bible. There are distortions in the Bible as well. As a rabbi, I can tell you that that human beings receive that Torah. Human beings receive the voice of God, and they often hear it in distorted fashions. But there are also some good things there, and the right ignores them. They only talk about the right hand of God, power over and domination. We need to talk about love, caring, and generosity.
Rabbi Michael Lerner, the author of The Left Hand of God, Taking Back Our Country from the
Religious Right.
There you go. And the website?
www.spiritualprogressives.org.
Spiritualprogressives.org. It's 16 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman radio program. We'll be right back.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And right, welcome back, my friends, for your minimum daily adult requirement of sanity. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program. Alan Ratner's with us with the Talk Radio News Service in Washington, D.C., talkradionews.com, their website. Hey, Alan.
Well, I'm going to actually start out by giving the phone to Greg, because the Supreme Court has come out with yet another wonderful decision, Tom.
Uh-oh. Okay.
Well, good afternoon. Yes,
hello, Greg.
Even though they're not hearing oral arguments, they have made some decisions. And the big one is about military recruiters on college campuses. In a unanimous decision, the court found that if a college accepts federal money, they have to allow military recruiters on campus. This was an argument that I attended, and it's interesting because most of these colleges had groups that had filed protests to actually protest the gays in the military policy of the military, and that's why these groups were trying to disallow military recruiters on campus. And what the court said is, look, if you take federal money, you have to allow the military on campus in order to do their recruiting, and you have to give them the same rights that you give other groups who do their recruiting on college campuses.
Yeah, well, it's sort of the American way, I guess.
It is.
And I mean that
somewhat
facetiously, but, you know, whoever pays, you know, for the party gets to define the terms of the party. Do you think that, Greg, is there any talk about this causing colleges to reevaluate whether or not they're going to be taking federal money? I have no idea how much federal money goes to Harvard versus how much federal money goes to Michigan State University, you know?
Well, that's actually a great question, and that actually came up in the argument. I remember after this argument, I did some research. Harvard actually takes approximately $400 million from the federal government.
A year?
They were the example because they have such a huge, huge endowment. Now, obviously, most of these schools can afford to not take federal money. In an article that I, saw, it said that as a group, colleges take approximately $35 billion a year, which means they don't really have the choice to not take this money. They have to do it, which means they have to now allow the military to come on campus, whether they like the message of don't ask, don't tell or not.
Right, right. Fascinating. Fascinating. Thank you, Greg.
Okay. Absolutely.
Thank you. Am I back to Ellen, or do I?
Other interesting things that are happening is, of course, Patriot Act is expected to pass this afternoon from the House. And the food labeling bill that I know you've been talking about, Tom, is going to be debated in the House, I believe, on Wednesday and Thursday.
Oh, that should be a good one. Ellen, I have a question. Doug Thompson, the publisher of Capitol Hill Blue, just received. He runs his own website.
I have found his stuff to be extremely accurate.
Yeah, well, let me
this little latest one.
Yeah, well, this latest one, I'm curious. I don't own the website that that hosts my content. He does. He owns his own server. He received a letter from the Department of Homeland Security requesting all sorts of information about who's accessing his website, how are they accessing, you know, what's he doing on his website, all this other stuff. And it said that if he told Capitol Hill Blue that the request had been made for information, that he would be committing a federal crime. Now, I'm wondering if Talk Radio News, if you guys own your own website, and if not, if so, have you received a letter like this from Department of Homeland Security?
We do not own our own website. We're about to actually, as you know, work on a podcasting site because we've talked to you a little bit about it, and we will own that and
So then what do you do if the Department of Homeland Security says you got to rat out talkradionews.com, and by the way, if you tell them that you're doing it, you're committing a crime, but you are them?
I'd go to jail.
I mean, this is incredible, isn't it? I mean, this is...
No, and Capitol Hill Blue is very, very accurate.
Yeah, Doug Thompson seems more often to be, you know, like 6 months ahead of everybody else, but he's got the stuff, and
he's got very good contacts in this town. He looks like a kind of whack bird, but he's got a lot of good contacts.
I think he looks pretty good too. He looks like an old friend of mine, actually. But in any case, So is this going to stand? I mean, this was one of the. I've got a little clip here of Howie Kurtz and David Gergen talking about this over the weekend on Reliable Sources, where David Gergen says, you know, never before has an administration gone after the press. They're pulling out a pre-World War I law to do this. And, you know, is the press going to stand for this?
This is the most loser press that has ever existed because they're afraid of their shadow and they don't want access cut off. You know, there was a woman in the Civil War era, and I forgot which president it was. It was either right before Lincoln or right after Lincoln. She was a woman reporter, and the president used to go swimming in the Potomac. And she sat on his clothes until he gave her an interview.
Oh, that was John Quincy Adams.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
So there you have it.
That was back when the press was really the press. That was like 1814 or something like that.
Right. Exactly.
1820.
Can you imagine?
Yeah.
He shot it done.
Yeah. 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 It's well, the bottom line now, though, is that if the press asks serious questions, then, or if they report on serious story, I mean, the Bushies are actually, they're talking about putting reporters in jail for violating national security laws.
I'll be the first to go if they, you know, I wouldn't be happy in jail, but I'm not going to be kowtowed by these characters.
Yeah. Well, good on you. Ellen Radner with the Talk Radio News Service, talkreadynews.com in Washington, D.C. Ellen, thank you for being with
us today.
Thank you. And to Greg as well. It's 27 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman radio program.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
I felt so good, like anything was possible. Hit cruise control and rubbed my eyes. The last 3 days, the rain was unstoppable. It was always cold, no sunshine.
And welcome back, my friends. 26 minutes before the hour, Tom Hartman here with you. The place where we dare to ask, is Walmart a person? And we dare to say, no, I don't think so. In fact, I'm quite sure they're not. Welcome back. Here's the story. I was talking with Ellen about this thing, Capitol Hill Blues. She knew what I was talking about. Maybe you didn't. And so let me share this with you, lest you be confused. Capitol Hill Blue is a progressive website, or a left-wing website, or whatever you want. News source out of Washington, D.C. It's run by a guy, owned by a guy named Doug Thompson. And you can find it at CapitolHillBlue.com. And Doug has been, like, way ahead of the curve on a whole series of stories. From, you know, Bush having temper tantrums to this NSA wiretap thing. And so Doug published his rant today. And I'll just share a little piece of it with you. He says, using many of the questionable surveillance and monitoring techniques that brought both questions and criticism to his administration, President George W. Bush has launched a war against reporters who write stories unfavorable to his actions and is planning to prosecute journalists to make examples of them in his war on terrorism. Bush recently directed Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez to, quote, use whatever means at your disposal, end quote, to wiretap, follow, harass, and investigate journalists who have published stories about the administration's illegal use of warrantless wiretaps, use of faulty intelligence, and anything else that he deems, quote, detrimental to the war on terror, end quote. Reporters for the New York Times, along with Capitol Hill Blue, revealed use of the National Security Agency to monitor phone calls and emails of Americans, say FBI agents have interviewed them, and criminal prosecutors at the Justice Department admit they are laying, quote, the groundwork for a grand jury that could lead to criminal charges, end of quote. As CIA Director Porter Goss recently told Congress, quote, it is my aim and it is my hope that we will witness a grand jury investigation with reporters present being asked to reveal who is leaking this information. I believe the safety of this nation and the people of this country deserve nothing less, end quote. Porter Goss, the Republican political hack that George W. Bush put in charge of the CIA, leading to an exodus from the CIA immediately thereafter. Of good, highly qualified, patriotic Americans within the CIA who didn't want to see that agency turn into another political arm of the Republican Party, an enforcer arm. So, as Doug Thompson points out, he says, just how widespread and uncontrolled this latest government assault has become hit close to home last week when one of the FBI's national security letters arrived at the company that hosts the servers for this website, CapitolHillBlue.com. The letter demanded traffic data, payment records, and other information about the website, along with information on me, the publisher. Now that's a problem, writes Doug Thompson. I own the company that hosts Capitol Hill Blue. So, in effect, the feds want me to turn over information on myself and not tell myself that I'm doing it. He says, I turned the letter over to my lawyer and told him to send the following message to the feds. It's two sentences. The first sentence is made up of two words, the first of which can't be said on the radio, but is similar to something that Dick Cheney said to Pat Leahy on the floor of the Senate. followed by strong letter to follow. When the press gets intimidated, then the parallels between the Bush administration and the rise of Adolf Hitler, frankly, in my mind, which have been startling but curious, start to become startling but dangerous. This is Howard Kurtz talking to David Gergen. David Gergen, who was an advisor to Richard Nixon and Ronald Reagan and Gerald Ford. The Republican David Gergen. Howard Kurtz talking to him on the program Reliable Sources this weekend.
You've been on both sides of this fence. Do you see this as an administration that really is going after journalists or just legitimately trying to stem the flow of classified information leaking onto the press?
I'm glad you brought that up. This is an administration that has engaged in secrecy at a level we have not seen in over 30 years. Unfortunately, I have to bring up the name of Richard Nixon because we haven't seen it since the days of Nixon. And now what they're doing, and they're using the war on terror as to justify, is they're starting to target journalists who try to pierce the veil of secrecy and find things and put them in the newspapers. Now, in the past, what the government has always done is go after the people who leak, the inside people. That's the way they try to stop leaks. This is the first administration that I can remember, including Nixon's, that said, and Porter Goss said this to Congress, that we need to think about a law that would put journalists who print national security things bring them up in front of grand juries and put them in jail if they don't reveal their stories.
And the Justice Department is talking about using a pre-World War I law to prosecute people who receive classified information that could be journalists. So now they're talking about potentially prosecuting journalists who simply receive information.
That is what the Bush administration is up to. I mean, this is getting. I mean, we've got thousands of young men and women dead in Iraq. To say this is getting serious. America's reputation destroyed around the world. We're running concentration camps down in Guantanamo Bay. I mean, and now, I tell you, the last administration to go after the press was John Adams in 1798 with his Alien and Sedition Acts. And he put 20 newspaper editors in prison for speaking out against him in their papers. And America was so horrified by that act that 2 years later, the Revolution of 1800 happened and Thomas Jefferson got swept into the presidency and pardoned all of those newspaper editors, repaid most of them. Several of them had actually, at least one of them had actually died in prison. Several of them went into exile to avoid going to prison. They slipped out of the country because John Adams was after him. First guy John Adams threw into jail. In fact, it was the day before the law actually became legal. It was Benjamin Franklin Bach, Benjamin Franklin's grandson, publishing the Aurora in Massachusetts for calling John Adams old, querulous, toothless, blind, toothless and balding. It's amazing. Paula in Eureka, California. Hey, Paula, welcome to the program. Paula? You are live and on the air. Oh, okay. Paula, you got to listen to your telephone, not the radio. John in Burlington, Washington. Hey, John.
Hey, Tom. This is what? John.
Yes. Hi, John. What's up?
Hello.
Apparently.
This is John.
Can you hear me now, John?
I can hear you. Can you hear me?
I can hear you just fine. You are live and on the air.
Okay. The fact is these people are fascists. People need to stand up and start stating it. There is no doubt these people are fascist. I have a sign in my trunk between my appointments. I stand at overpasses. I stand at corners. It is time to stand up. Just as Samuel Adams stated during the Revolution, it is time to stand up.
Yeah.
The reason I called was this weekend on C-SPAN. I can't pronounce his name exactly, but I think it was Professor Fukuyama.
Mm-hmm. Francis Fukuyama. He's one of the neocon kind of architects of all. I actually quoted part of his book in my book, What Would Jefferson Do? He's the guy who pointed out that democracies never go to war against each other. And then the neocons took that, which is true. And then the neocons took that bit of information and said, therefore, let's shove democracy down the throat of everybody with the barrel of a gun, which unfortunately doesn't work.
It was an unbelievable interview this weekend on C-SPAN, one of those three-hour deals they do.
Yeah.
I didn't see the whole thing, but I saw enough of it to make me ill. because this guy basically is an apologist for himself as well as the neocon movement. He signed letters with the PNAC to attack Iraq both before and after 9/11, but then when somebody called in and asked him a question about what he was going to do if he was prosecuted for war crimes, he said, well, before the Iraq war, I published a paper against the Iraq war. And to me, that's like jumping off the train just before it goes off the cliff.
Yeah.
Okay? These people are unbelievable. He also has contributed to Libby's defense fund, and a caller called him on that. And what he said to that is, well, he's an old friend of mine, and the government has millions of dollars to prosecute, and poor Mr. Libby, he's got...
What you have to understand about these guys, John, about these neocons, is that, you know, following the philosophy of Strauss, of Leo Strauss,
right?
That one of the things that Strauss taught was that there is, you know, there are the masses, then there's like the kind of informed inner circle, and then there's the uber-informed, the very informed inner circle. And the informed inner circle has the rationale. The very informed inner circle really understands that what it's all about is that you can't trust democracy. Democracy is not, you know, America is too precious to just leave to democracy. You can't trust democracy. And so you have to lie to the people. You have to come up with credible stories to tell them that will satisfy them and placate them. And you even have to lie to that inner circle that thinks it's the inner circle but actually isn't. And in my opinion, Bush is part of that inner circle that thinks it's the inner circle but isn't. And then you've got folks like Wolfowitz and Feith and Pearl and perhaps Fukuyama, who are the people on the super inside who really think that they've figured out how to run the world, and they're tragically wrong. And as a result of that, 100,000 people are dead now.
And what you have just described, Tom, that whole philosophy is neo-fascist.
Yes.
It's not neoconservative. It is neo-fascist.
I don't disagree with you at all, John. I don't disagree with you at all. Although, technically, the definition of the word fascism is the merging of state and business enterprises. We're seeing that as well. So, you know, however you define it, I'm right there with you. 45 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
I'm free. Free falling. Yeah, I'm free.
Well, we used to be anyway. Welcome back to the radio support group, Bob Bayan, for We the People of the United States of America. The Bush administration's war against the press, their war on the American people, their war on democracy. How much farther is this thing going to go? Have you been sneak and peeked? You'll never know. Have they asked for your library records? Have they tried to find out what books you're checking out? Have they sent a letter to Amazon.com to find out what books you've been buying? Have they, you know, how far have they? You won't know because it's against the law for any of these people to tell you. One of the folks in our chat room, Growl Ruse, says, I just called the White House and screamed at them for trying to destroy the freedom of the press. Yeah, and now they have your phone number. Unless you spoofed it with the caller ID. But see, I mean, isn't it weird that we live in a society now where we have to think about that? Oh, gee, if I call the White House and I tell them that I don't think that they should be having a war against the press, does that mean that they're going to investigate me next? Should I be intimidated? I mean, how many people are going to be cowed by this? This is McCarthyism raised to an art form. Judy in Dana Point, California. Hey, Judy, welcome to the program.
Hi, Tom. I have a question.
Mm-hmm.
Are they going to arrest Robert Novak because he leaked Valerie Plame's thing?
No, he's a Republican. No, I mean, I'm very serious when I say that. These guys, they want to go out and they want to bust journalists who are exposing their crimes. But when there are journalists who commit, you know, what you and I might consider a crime, in to further the agenda of this administration, they're going to go along with it.
It's so absurd. I'm just beside.
It is like our government has been taken over by the mafia.
Well, they have, but they all, yeah, that's true. They
all. Well, Mike Malloy talks about the Bush crime family. It's now the Bush crime administration.
Yes, and I like Mike Malloy. I listen to him, too.
Yeah, he's
love
a good guy.
I think you're great. Well, thank you for my question. But,
thank you,
you know, they can't have it both ways.
Well, they're sure trying, and up to this point, they've been able to have it both ways. Hopefully, this is coming to an end. Hopefully, Americans are waking up. Judy, thank you for the call. Paula in Eureka, California. Hey, Paula.
Hi, Tom.
Hey, Paula.
Listen, I was looking on Tom Paine first thing this morning, and there's a letter that Bill Frist wrote Friday night to Harry Reid. Apparently, the Intelligence Committee is going to have hearings tomorrow on the 7th. To decide whether or not to even begin the investigations into the administration's warrantless wiretapping. And what Senator Frist is telling Senator Reid is that he thinks that Democratic partisanship is keeping them from doing their job, so he's going to do the filibuster thing and rewrite the rules. And so basically they're putting a lot of pressure on these senators to not hold hearings. So for those senators in the seven states, which I was so upset I didn't get them all down, but I know it was Nebraska, Maine, Kansas, Nevada, West Virginia, so that would be like Senator Snow, Roberts, Hagel, Reed, and Rockefeller, and there's one more. If you could call them and encourage them not to cave into this and to definitely hold the hearings because they're voting on it tomorrow, and this hasn't really hit the mainstream media according to that website that you told me about.
Yeah, let me... You said this is on TomPaine.org?
Yes, yes. Okay. And yeah. the letter to Senator Reid is, you know, quite...
I'm going to track this thing down during the break, Paul, and we'll
share
it with our
listeners. Thank you so much.
So
for those people, there's a call to action for those people in those states and for everybody who does want them to have these hearings. You need to get active because they're going to vote on this tomorrow. So thank you so much, Tom.
Thank you, Paula, for bringing this up. I appreciate it. It's great
Bye.
To hear from you. Dick in Dayton, Ohio. Hey, Dick, welcome to the program.
Hey, Tom, how you doing today?
I am great, but I'll get better, Dick, especially after the elections in 06.
Yeah, hey, I'll tell you what. I was telling your screener, I got a list of the legislatures in Ohio, but somebody better stop this library, these cuts in Ohio. They're terrible. Those clerks serve a valuable purpose, Tom.
You're talking about the at the state level, the state of Ohio is cutting their subsidies to municipal libraries.
Yep. Pretty bad.
Well, see, you can't have an informed populace and have a functional democracy. And
That's
these guys
right.
don't want to have a functional democracy. The reason that Ben Franklin started the first lending library in the United States for public use, subsidized by the city of Philadelphia, was because he wanted there to be an informed citizenry because he believed that that was essential to democracy. And that's the exact reason why the Republicans are working so hard to destroy our public libraries and destroy our public schools and destroy our other public institutions because they don't want, and certainly...
Right.
To allow the consolidation of things like, you know, the telephone guy. I mean, Jimmy Carter busted up AT&T. Now what are they doing? They're reforming.
Yeah.
I mean, it's the whole thing about they are not in favor of us having democracy or of the small and medium-sized businesses being functional in the United States. We're talking about a new oligarchy. We're talking about the rise of the 36 wealthy families like run Mexico. That's what's happening in the United States right now. It ain't a good thing.
No.
I appreciate you bringing it up, Dick. Brian in Everett, Washington. Hey, Brian, we just have a few seconds left. What's up?
Yeah, I think if I check something out of the library that they're suspicious of, it's not a bomb-making book. I think maybe it's the David Ray Griffin book. What do you think?
I think you're right.
Yeah.
Or maybe a Noam Chomsky book. Or maybe even the collected writings of Thomas Jefferson.
Yeah, or they don't. I don't see them doing bad things. They see me seeing them and who knows what and all this stuff.
Oh, yeah. It's
wacky.
It's beyond wacky. I mean, this is an all-out assault on democracy. There's just simply no other way to describe it. These guys are waging war on the institutions of democracy. Brian, thank you for the call. Good to hear from you. I mean, this is the fourth estate. You know, you have the three branches of government, and they are held in check by the press. The founders thought the press was so vital that there is only one industry. It could have been the weapons industry. It wasn't. It could have been clothing. It wasn't. It could have been food. It could have been water supply. It wasn't. It was the press, the only industry that they carved out a piece for in the Constitution of the United States. The First Amendment guarantees a free press. Until the Bushies came along and said, Constitution? What's that? 57 minutes past the hour.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information. calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded. Here's Tom Hartman.
Well, indeed, Harry Reid did receive this letter on Friday, just in time to avoid the news cycle. This is the, you know, the trash bin journalism issue, the thing that the Republicans are so good at. Bill Frist sends a letter to Harry Reid. Due to stifling partisanship that is exhibited through repeated calls by Democrats on the committee, the Senate Intelligence Committee, to conduct politically motivated investigations, he says the current the inquiries currently underway and the ones being proposed by the minority, the Democrats, would demand an overwhelming amount of staff, time, attention, and resources. The committee is focusing most of its efforts on investigations that offer little or no value to the challenges our nation now faces. He's talking about looking into whether or not the NSA illegal wiretapping by the Bush administration is actually a crime. And then he goes on to say, if attempts to use the committee's charter for political purposes persist, we may have to simply acknowledge that partisan oversight, while a worthy aspiration, is not possible. If we are unable to reach agreement, I believe we must consider other options to improve the committee's oversight capabilities, to include restructuring the committee so that it is organized and operated like most Senate committees. In other words, whitewash on behalf of the Bushies. Incredible. Incredible. We'll get back to this in more detail as we go on to the program. Right now, Alec Dubrow is with us. He's the media coordinator for the International Labor Communications Association, ILCAonline.org. Alec, welcome to the program.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
Great. Great to have you back on with us.
I always love it when politicians criticize other ones, calling them political.
Yeah.
It's like the ones who run for office and tell you they're not a politician.
Right. Well, it worked well for Reagan.
Apparently. Well.
And that's what Bush tried, too. I mean, these guys, both of them, in both cases, they ran on essentially a platform of, I'm not a politician, I'm not an insider, I'm an outsider trying to save you from those nasty insiders.
Well, I think Bush has proved that he isn't a politician, but we've got him as president anyway. So
yeah.
There we have it.
There you have it.
Well, so,
speaking of politicians, one of the guys who lobbies them rather heavily, Richard Berman, is out there with his new... What's the deal here?
I think I talked about it a few weeks ago, that Rick Berman has devised this anti-union campaign, and some of your listeners who don't get the national newspapers or may not be in the area where he's operating might be unaware of it, but he's taking out full-page ads in the national newspapers. He's run his second round of them, attacking unions in basically the most scurrilous fashion I have seen yet. This latest one, he does two things. One, he says he blows the lid off the union salaries, the salaries of union leaders. Well, these things are all published under the Department of Labor regulations anyway. It doesn't take a whole lot of lid blowing, except that what he does is he combines their travel budgets and their salaries so that they seem like more than they are. Whenever somebody publishes CEO compensation, I've never seen them add in the travel budgets, but there you have it. And then what he does, the graphic on it showed pictures of Kim Jong-il, Fidel Castro, and the president of Unite Here, the union. And he pulls out a quote that out of a New York Times story that the president, Bruce Rayner, once made, saying there's no reason to subject the workers to an election. Mm-hmm. But in context, what Rayner was talking about was that they were calling for card check rather than an NLRB-sponsored election. Now, this may sound a little arcane to some of your viewers, but a card check is when people who want a union, and maybe a union organizer starts it, and maybe some of the workers themselves start it, they pass out cards asking who wants a union there. And if they get a majority, the employer has the option of recognizing the union. Very few do. They are not required by law to do it, but that's what they do. If, in fact, the employer says no, and this is what Rayner was talking about, then they get to subject the workers to hours and hours and hours of anti-union propaganda,
training,
pressure, and frequently intimidation.
Mm-hmm.
So what he was calling for was, in fact, a fairer way of elections. And in some ways, card check is harder to win on than an election because you have to have a majority of everybody in the unit, whereas in an NLRB election.
So the bottom line here is that basically there's a concerted and organized right-wing campaign to try to destroy the ability of Americans to unionize and to organize.
Thank you for summing up after I was going in the obscure direction. Yes.
I'm curious, Alec Dubrow with the International Labor Communications Association, the media coordinator. Alec, I'm curious if labor is going to weigh in on this issue. I'm assuming that probably many people in the media are represented by unions. I'm wondering if labor is going to weigh in on this issue of the administration starting to or threatening to prosecute journalists under a pre-World War I law that makes it illegal to receive classified information.
Well, actually, the Newspaper Guild has been very active on this stuff. I don't think, unfortunately, because the labor movement is still a large movement and it's very fractured, many people who are union members have no idea that this is taking place, that the imposition of sedition laws. But yeah, those who represent writers, the Newspaper Guild, my own union, the National Writers Union, frequently the Writers Guild, which represents screen and television writers, take a very strong position on what's called First Amendment rights.
Why is this not getting much traction in the press, Alec? I mean, you would think that an administration declaring war on the press would be something that the press would be screaming about. Is it because, by and large, the quote, the press these days is a handful, maybe 20 or 30 total, maybe as many as 40 or 50, people who are on television, by and large, a few probably very prominent on radio, but mostly on television, who are pulling down high six-figure, low seven-figure salaries, or even, you know, eight-figure salaries, I suppose, in case of some of the network, hosts, anchors. And they would rather, you know, go along and get along and make sure that their, you know, $500,000 or $1 million a year salary is protected than speak out on behalf of their industry. Could that be it? Is this about the corporatization of our news and starification? I don't know. Turning news reporters into media stars rather than the old-fashioned Edward R. Murrows and Walter Cronkites?
Well, I think that that's definitely a large part of it, and it always has been a problem in organizing in white-collar industries, that a lot of people have no identification whatsoever with the bulk of their workers and think of themselves largely as individuals or just identify with management. What I really think is interesting is to contrast this with the with the athletes, those who are organized, who make salaries the equivalent of or much larger than the stars in the news industry, but yet have stuck together in solidarity on these particular issues. I mean, they do have a unified voice, even if individuals in it may have differing opinions. But they've come out very strongly on all these issues, drug testing, whatever it is that they feel threatened by. No, it's interesting that certainly the pundits, the higher paid, the editors have not made much of this. And I, to tell you the truth, am as baffled as you are. Certainly star status has something to do with it. But unfortunately, not that many newsrooms are unionized anymore.
Yeah.
And that has a large measure to do with it. I don't know, but overall, of course, reporters don't pick the stories that they cover. If the editors or the news directors at stations don't say that this is a story, then
it's not a story.
Then it's not a story. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's being covered, sure, in the blogs, and it's being covered on a lot of progressive websites, and certainly, in the freedom of expression community, but not enough. I mean,
this just really concerns me. I mean, on the one hand, you've got the Bush administration saying that they are going to crack down on anybody who outs them for illegally wiretapping American citizens.
Right.
And then on the other hand, at the same time, you've got Bill Frist writing a letter to Harry Reid saying that the Senate committee that's in charge of looking into whether the administration has broken the law, and we do have a system of checks and balances that our founders came up with, is not going to look into it. I just, you know, it's just, and it seems like the only group left that has a voice is labor, and I wish labor would be speaking out on these issues more loudly. I know that you are. Alec DeBrow, ILCAonline.org. You want to learn more about this and more other issues, you can check it out there. Alec, thanks for being with us.
Yeah, my pleasure, Tom. Take care.
Great talking with you. ILCA Online. 16 minutes past the hour. I'm Tom Hartman.
Bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
It's good to be king, just for a while. To be there in velvet, yeah, to give them a smile.
This were a dictatorship, it'd be a heck of a lot easier. Just so long as I'm the dictator.
Indeed. Welcome back, friends. 21 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Truth and common sense in broadcasting for a change. We really are facing some problems here we must solve. And I'm telling you, it all goes back to the founding principles of this nation. There is just, well, I'm going to get into that in just a moment. First, yes. A children's book about two male penguins that raise a baby penguin has been moved out of the children's section of two public library branches in Missouri after parents complained it had homosexual overtones. The illustrated book, And Tango Makes Three, is based on the true story of two male penguins named Roy and Silo who adopted an abandoned egg at New York's Central Park Zoo in the late 1990s. The book written by Peter Parnell and Justin Robert Richardson was moved from the children's section at two Rolling Hills Consolidated Library branches in Savannah and St. Joseph in northwest Missouri. Barbara Reed, the Rolling Hills director, said experts report that adoptions are not unusual in the penguin world. It is normal if a female penguin dies for another male to join the father, the first male, and the two of them to raise the little chick. But the religious Reich will have no part of it. You can't have a book like that in a library. Speaking of ironies, today's, the non sequitur cartoon by Wiley. It's today. There's these two explorers, right, going through the jungle, and they're behind this giant rock, and one saying to the other, "Ah, come on, nature's calling, and this looks as good a place as any. Besides, what's the worst that can happen, right? Like, you know, go ahead and pee on the rock." But you can see then, you pull back, and you see the other side of the rock is like this giant face, and there's like thousands, and there's skulls all around it, and there's thousands of people bowing down to it holding spears. Well, those of you who saw the non sequitur cartoon today, you'll find this particularly interesting juxtaposition from the Associated Press. Hindu priests who look after the memorial of Indian independence leader Mohandas Gandhi conducted a purification ceremony at the shrine after a visit from President Bush. The sniffer dogs who scoured the area ahead of his visit defiled the shrine. After the dog visit, the memorial was cleansed with water brought from the Ganges River, they write in the Associated Press, which Hindus consider holy. The dogs are flown in from the U.S. as part of the intense security surrounding the president. But the Hindu priests believe they tainted the site. Letting dogs into the memorial also drew sharp protests from Hindu politicians and Gandhi's great-grandson, Tushar Gandhi, who called the incident a national shame. Did you hear that in your local news? Somehow I kind of doubt it. We've talked about before the significance of democracy and how democracy works. And this, I think, is just so remarkable. The idea that democracy might be in our genes. We have assumed for for 7,000 years, ever since the emergence of what we call civilization, that kingdom and hierarchy is normal, and that egalitarian, essentially democracy, that Rousseau and Locke's idea, that those are abnormal. In fact, it was the assumption of most of the founders, not Jefferson's, oddly, but most of the rest of the founders, and not Franklin's either, but most of the founders, it was their assumption that they were creating a noble thing with democracy in the United States, but that it flew in the face of human nature. And that's why you had to have strong laws to protect people from the emergence of dictatorship, because that was the norm for human beings. Because that's the norm for all animals, because everybody assumed that the animal kingdom is organized like a hierarchy. You have alpha dogs, you have alpha deer, you have alpha bears, you have, you know, bloody, bloody, blah. And the assumption was that in any kind of herd or any kind of pack or whatever, that you're going to have the king. And then 2 years ago, at the University of Sussex in the UK, Conrad and Roper, two scientists, blew this thing apart. They discovered that, in fact, democracy is the norm. And that the alpha animal had first choice of sexual mate, you know, the Darwinian thing of passing along the strongest genes, but that was it. That when it came to decision-making, when the deer were trying to decide which way to go to get some water, they would sit around and graze until 51% of them were pointing in a particular direction, and then they'd all move in that direction, whether the leader was pointing that way or not. Sometimes the alpha deer was in the back going, hey, where'd everybody go? Well, now we find the same thing as this sense of altruism, this ability of social kindness, the ability to participate that is essential to democracy emerges. This now from People.com, People Magazine, emerges as early as the age of 18 months of age. Simple experiment illustrates fairly sophisticated brain development. Tots watch babies, 18-year-olds, 18-month-olds, watched as psychology researcher Felix Warnikin did ordinary tasks such as using clothespins to hang towels. Oops, he dropped a clothespin. Video shows one baby glancing between Warnikin's face and the dropped pin before quickly crawling over, grabbing the object, pushing up to his feet, and eagerly handing back the pin. He's trying to help. He was not asked to. This pro-social motivation, he found it right across the board in all children. No payoff, no reward, just, hey, I'd like to help. That's what's natural for humans. We need to tell the Bushies this. 27 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Is this what democracy means? Is this what democracy means? Is this what democracy means? Is this what democracy means?
And welcome back, my friends. 34 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Is this what democracy means? Indeed. Video. Oops, he dropped a clothespin. Video shows one baby glancing between his... here's the story. This guy, this researcher, he's using clothespins to put diapers on a clothesline. And he drops a clothespin. Now, if it looks like he deliberately... this is the key. The toddler's offered no help when he deliberately pulled a book off a stack or threw a marker on the floor. Didn't work when it was deliberate. But when the toddler perceived him to have accidentally dropped something, they helped out. After all, altruism, they write in the report, after all, altruism means helping with no expectation of anything in return. That's the extraordinary piece of this. What I got to say is that the norm in human society, in animal society, the norm, I mean, the people who own pets know this, the norm is to cooperate. In fact, if our individual bodies were not cooperative, if one organ was to say, I'm going to take over and start using up all the resources of the body, that's called cancer. Cooperation is the normal thing. There's certain competition for mostly mates in the animal kingdom and the plant kingdom for that matter. And that's necessary to pass on strong genes, but that's about it. I would suggest to you that indigenous people, tribal people, who are living the way that humans have lived for 160,000 years, which is by and large democratic, the people that Washington and Jefferson and Franklin and Madison and Jay and the founders observed and said, oh, this is how it's done. The Iroquois Confederacy, for example, who were, you know, members of which were invited to the Constitutional Convention as honored guests and advisors. Ben Franklin getting up and saying, if six nations of ignorant savages can forge a union which has lasted millennia, it would be a strange thing if 13 colonies of educated Englishmen couldn't do the same, or words to that effect. I don't have the quote right in front of me, but it's one or two words off, but that's essentially what Franklin said. Democracy is normal. And I submit to you, and in fact, when you look at, by the way, you look at animals, when Conrad and Roper published their studies on red deer, on these animals, and they found that it was actually democracy that was used to make decisions. I interviewed Tim Conrad, or maybe it was Tim Roper, I forget which, but I interviewed one of them, first name Tim, for my book, What Would Jefferson Do? There's a whole chapter about this, and What Would Jefferson Do? And he said, you know, after that article about their research was published in Nature, the journal Nature, which is a real, you know, top-end science publication. He says, after that was published, I got calls from ichthyologists, fish scientists, bird scientists, bug scientists, right on down the list, all these different kinds of, you know, people studying different species, primatologists, and saying, yeah, my gorillas do the same thing. My fish do the same thing. They make decisions democratically. How do you know? How does a school, you ever watch the School of Fish? They all of a sudden they turn, you know, left or right, all at the same time. It's not one who leads and then the rest follow. It's not like watching a semi-trailer turn or a train go around a curve. They all move at the same time. How is that happening? They're voting. When more than 51% of those fish have moved a quarter of an inch to the right, the entire school moves a quarter inch to the right. They're all randomly moving a little bit in one direction or the other all the time, and they're all with their very, very, very rapid peripheral vision, noticing what all those around them do. This is how swarms of gnats, insects, behave this way. You ever seen a swarm of gnats? It's like just this ball of bugs flying in the air, and they just suddenly move. And sometimes there's a few left behind going, oh, what happened? But most of them are, you know, they moved. Birds, flocks of birds. Democracy is the normal thing. Altruism is the normal thing. And I submit to you, my friends, that those people who are suggesting, the Bill Frists of the world, the George Bushes of the world, who are suggesting, the conservatives of the world, who are suggesting that the healthy thing to do is to have an oligarchy ruled by a small number of very, very wealthy families and corporations in the United States, are expressing a mental and social illness. And it's a mental and social illness that has threatened humans over and over and over throughout history. And it threatens us once again. And what can we do about it? What we can do about it is educate people about it, awaken people to it, inform people about it, and raise the word. Spread the word. Raise the standard. Henry in Spokane, Washington. Hey, Henry, what's up?
Hello, Tom. That was fascinating about the democracy in the animals and that response.
Yeah.
That is fantastic.
Gives you faith and hope, doesn't it?
Well, yeah, in sharp juxtaposition to that, though. I'm a disabled Vietnam vet,
mm-hmm.
and I very often go down to my local VA hospital for treatment.
Mm-hmm.
On my last visit, I was talking with my doctor and getting quite vocal about the impeachment word.
Mm-hmm.
And and a look of sheer terror came over his face, and he told me, he said, "Hush, watch what you say around here." And I was flabbergasted. That sounded like I was in Nazi Germany, and I'm in a United States military Veterans Administration hospital.
Yeah. It's like the Soviet Union.
I'm being warned what I should say and what I shouldn't.
Yeah.
That is, it's frightening, Tom.
It is.
And
it really is.
People literally have to wake up. We've got to get a, I mean, not just get we've got to have an all-out attack against the people. Oh, and by the way, I think that the conservative religion, faithful people in this country have been had.
Yeah. This goes beyond, you know, Henry, this goes beyond throw the bums out. We have people now who are running this country and who have seized control of the Republican Party and are attempting to seize control of the Democratic Party.
I agree.
Who are not well. You know, they're just not well, and what they are doing is not good for this nation, and they are leading us down a road that many countries have gone down before, and that this country has succeeded in resisting for 230 years. They're leading us down a road that I don't think most Americans, if they could see just a little ways down that road, would say they ever want to go.
Well, they seem like a bunch of psychopaths, because a psychopath will do anything and everything for his own self-interest and then brag about it.
Yeah. Yep.
And it's absolutely frightening, and we've got to support our congressmen. We've got to support our press. We've really got to tell these press people, get the backbone, stand up.
Well, we've got to get back our press. I mean, here, this re-merger of AT&T, what we are seeing is the re-accumulation of vast empires in the media.
Yes.
And you know, Jimmy Carter broke up AT&T, and there is a reason why. I mean, there's a reason why Senator Sherman in 1881 put forward the Sherman Antitrust Act. And the reason why is because that when corporate power reaches a certain threshold, it becomes oligarchic. It becomes aristocratic. It becomes, to quote Thomas Jefferson, an economic power capable of threatening the state. And that is, you know, we're there. And it's all the result of Ronald Reagan stopped enforcing the Sherman Antitrust Act, which led to this mergers and acquisition mania in the 1980s. Remember Michael Milken and all these guys and these M&A kings and whatnot?
And the Bush family.
Yeah, and exactly. Henry, thank you for the call. Good to hear from you.
Hang in there. I really appreciate the work you're doing.
Well, thank you, Henry.
I really do. Hang in there, Tom.
Thank you. You too. Yeah, keep up the good word and keep speaking out. Keep your doctor in your prayers. Can you imagine working in a Veterans Administration hospital and being afraid of what your patients say about the government? I mean, this is O'Reilly, right?
So, all those clowns over at the liberal radio network, we could incarcerate them immediately. Will you have that done, please? Send over the FBI and just put them in chains? Because they, you know, they're undermining everything.
Yeah, we all thought it was a joke. I'm not sure it's a joke anymore. I'm really, and Richard Nixon, of course.
Well, when the president does it, that means that it is not illegal.
Right. When the president does it, it is not illegal. And, you know, are we going to take this? Please, by the way. 1-888. All right, telephone number for Congress. Call your senators. Each one of us has two. Call your senators, 888-355-3588, and tell them to let, whether it's a Republican or a Democrat, tell them that you want the Senate Committee on Intelligence to do a thorough investigation of this NSA business. 45 minutes past the hour.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Other name.
back, my friends. 9 minutes before the hour. It will be shortly, anyway. Our telephone number, 1-866-440-8466. 440-THOM, as in Tom. And welcome back to the program. Bob in Livermore, California on the line. Hey, Bob, what's on your mind today?
Hello there.
Hey, Bob.
Yes, boycott razor blades, by the way. Hey, good stuff. But anyway,
say that again?
Boycott razor blades.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Oh, no, no, no. I noticed the picture on the Air America Radio webpage shows apparently a picture of you with a beard, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. We all know shaving's an unnatural act. So.
Oh, I see. Boycott razor blades. I thought you were saying breakout razor blades.
No, couldn't figure
that one out.
No, the thing I really wanted to bring up here was the fact that I just got communication from Pete Stark's office, the congressman from the 13th District, that he basically says he does not feel it is worthwhile to spend any more money on investigating 9/11. And yeah. I think this is an indication that this next election cycle, we need to replace this congressman with somebody who is willing to take up when investigation is very sorely needed. We just have to, you know.
Is Pete Stark your member of Congress?
Yeah, Pete Stark.
Is he a Republican or Democrat? Forgive my ignorance.
He's a Democrat. I'm appalled that a Democrat would sit there and say, we're not going to spend more money on investigating 9/11, when in fact, when you look at a comparison, we've spent peanuts compared to what had been spent during the Clinton administration trying to get Clinton, which was appalling.
Yeah. Yeah, anyway. $74 million was spent trying to get Clinton. Yeah.
Anyway.
My take on this, Bob, is that in all probability, if the mysteries around 9/11 are solved, it's going to be the same way the mysteries around the JFK killing were solved. It's going to be, you know, 2, 3, 4, or 5 decades of diligent research by literally hundreds or thousands of individuals. Even if Pete Stark was in favor of investigating 9/11, I wouldn't trust it.
Well, right.
And I really don't think that I'm wearing a tinfoil hat when I say that. I think most Americans would agree with me.
I agree with you. This is
particularly the dimensions of 9/11 that have to do with the number one, the failures, number two, the manipulations of the Bush administration.
Yeah.
Both pre, during, and post.
Yeah, and indeed, I appreciate you comparing it to the JFK assassination, because there's still unanswered questions from that whole business that
I just published a book on it. on the Kennedy assassination. Yes.
You just published a book on it. Okay.
Yes, it's called Ultimate Sacrifice. You can
deprived here.
900 pages.
Oh, I will definitely
2,400 footnotes.
Oh, bitchin'. I will have to look.
We solved it, Bob. We solved it. Lamar Walden and I. But, you know, we've done programs on that, so this is not about the Kennedy assassination.
But I
can tell you, I've been in the middle of this thing for 17 years, just trying to figure out who killed Jack Kennedy. And you know, a lot of people went before me. I think that you're going to see the exact same thing with 9/11. In fact, I think you already see these things emerging. But, Bob, I got to move along, but I appreciate
the call.
Thank
you a lot. All right, bye.
Thank you very much. And you know, I'm not sure that that's a reason, however, to throw out a good Democrat. I don't know if Stark is a good Democrat or not. I just, frankly, I don't know him. That's a decision that you're going to have to make there. But Brian in Seattle. Hey, Brian, welcome to the program.
Oh, Tom, hi. Just thank you for all your work. And I just turned on a few minutes ago. We usually listen to you in the morning, and you were talking about how the democracy in animal systems and natural systems.
Yeah, democracy is the natural state of people. Jefferson even went so far as to say that democracy was the natural state of animals, not just humans. And he was ridiculed by his peers for saying this, but he thought that he saw democracy in the entire animal and plant kingdom. And it turns out he was right.
I couldn't agree more. I'm a family systems therapist. And Dr. Murray Bowen, B-O-W-E-N, did some original phenomenal research on a process called individuality and togetherness,
mm-hmm.
and an emotional process of it, and very much talked about this in this struggle that if we have too much togetherness, we will die, and if we have too much individuality, we also will die.
Right.
And phenomenal. I just highly recommend if you have a chance to read some of it.
Okay.
Because it really provides a scientific basis for what you were talking about.
Okay, great. Thank you, Brian.
And I want to tell you, thank you for the great work. You guys have a lot of courage. I really appreciate it.
Well, thank you. And thank you for calling and speaking out. I mean, just keep on doing it, please.
I will.
Not just calling to the program, but I mean, speaking out to your friends and everybody else. This requires all of us.
The thing, but one of the really interesting things about the animal study, by the way, and I got a really fascinating email on this the other day from somebody who'd read my book, What Would Jefferson Do, which has this chapter in it where I was interviewing these scientists about democracy, is that in a non-threatening environment, it took 51% of the animals pointing at a particular waterhole for the entire herd to move it to that particular waterhole. But when there was a predator nearby, it took two-thirds. It took 66%. And this person sent me an email who had read the book and said, I wonder if when Bush's approval ratings drop below 33%, when two-thirds of Americans have gone in a completely different direction than him, because we certainly perceive ourselves right now to be in a time of risk, and the only thing that has kept a lot of Americans glued to George W. Bush is their belief that he might protect them from that risk. When he drops below 33%, will he have gone below that critical threshold? Is there some sort of, to quote Rupert Sheldrake or paraphrase, is there some sort of morphogenetic field that connects us all, or is it simply a matter of communication among us all? But what happens when his popularity, his power drops below 33%? Is at that point, will Americans say, enough, enough? At that point, will Congress stand up and say, it's time to have an impeachment hearing? Who knows? Thanks so much for being with us today, my friends. I do appreciate it. Tomorrow, a tale of two capitalisms. One took the road less traveled, and that's the problem. Has Bush ever met a spending bill he didn't like? That and more. And your phone calls tomorrow. Remember, my friends, democracy begins with you. Tag, you're it. We'll see you tomorrow.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.